thanks the organizers for giving me this opportunity to talk here. This will be another talk about quantum correlations, non-locality, and models to simulate quantum correlations. So there might be a large overlap with the previous talk, I'm sorry about it. But there might also be some differences, so please just don't leave the room now. The first difference is maybe the approach and the motivation. So the question I'm asking is how to quantify the non-locality of quantum correlations. And one way to do that, that's not the only one, but one way to quantify non-locality is to try to compare the non-locality of quantum correlations to the non-locality of other non-local resources, such as communication. And if you can recover the quantum correlations with another non-local resource that you can easily quantify, then you can translate this quantification into the quantum correlations and use this alternative non-local resource to quantify the correlations, the quantum correlations. So we'll start with an overview, the basics of non-locality, and I guess with Michael's talk, I can go fast on that. I will talk about the simulation of singlet correlations, and here when I mean singlet, that will be any Maximilian tunnel state of 2 qubits. And then I will, that will be reviews of known results that you already heard about. And then I will talk about n-partite correlations, and especially the GHZ correlations that we've been looking at very recently. So, non-locality, what I will call it non-locality is the following. So we consider the standard scenario where you have two observers, Alice and Bob, who receive some physical system from a source, and they can choose measurement settings, which I call X and Y, and they get some outcomes, alpha and beta. So that they repeat the experiment, and at the end of the day, they meet and they can estimate this correlation, probability distribution, probability of getting results alpha and beta, given the measurement settings X and Y. And if Alice and Bob are scientists, they observe correlations, so they want to understand these correlations. And if you think in classical terms, there are only two ways to understand correlations. Either there is some communication between Alice and Bob that is used to establish the correlations, or there is some pre-established strategies that predetermine the outcomes of Alice and Bob. And this is what led John Bell to formulate his local causality assumption, which says that this probability distribution factorizes in this form given some maybe unknown parameters, lambda. So when Alice received the measurement setting X, given that she knows this random variable lambda, she can output some correlation at outcome alpha that depends only on X and lambda. Same for Bob. So yeah, as you probably know, as Michael reminded us, you can derive Bell inequalities from this assumption. And the simplest one is the CHSH inequality when you have two possible measurements with two possible outcomes. And the CHSH inequality is this one. And this can be validated by quantum correlations. And you conclude that quantum mechanics is non-local. So this is what I mean by non-local. I don't want to enter into the controversy about the term I should use here. If you don't like this term, you can just change it into any other preferred term, terminology. But yeah, non-local here means the Bell's local causality assumption is not valid for quantum correlations. Okay, more specifically, what you can do is with quantum mechanics, you can have a source that sends a Maximilian tunnel state of 2 qubits, single state, to Alice and Bob. And So Alice and Bob receive qubits, so they can describe their measurements as vectors on the Bloch sphere, vector A, vector B. And the correlations that they will observe if the outcomes are plus or minus one is this one. So the average of the product alpha beta is given by the scalar product between the two vectors, A and B. And for a proper choice of measurement settings, you can reach this value for the CHSH inequality, which is greater than 2, and this is how you show that quantum mechanics is non-local. And this is a well-established experimental fact. And in many labs today, non-locality of quantum mechanics is observed in many different experiments and many different physical systems, quantum systems. So, well, nice. This is a very nice feature of quantum mechanics that's fascinating. But that's not only a nice feature. And actually, in this new era of quantum information, it's been realized that it could be useful. Quantum non-locality could be useful for information processing applications, such as non-local computation, QKD, secret key distribution, device-independent quantum state estimation, randomness generation, and so on. So now we see this non-locality not only as a nice feature of the quantum theory, but really as a resource. And if you want to know what you can do with this resource, the natural question is, okay, how can we quantify it? How can we say how useful it is? Can we compare quantum correlations? We need to find a way to quantify it. So the first natural approach would be to quantify the non-locality with the amount of violation of Bell inequality. And this is pretty much equivalent to the robustness to noise. But well, this is a possible way. There are some drawbacks with this approach, especially you don't know which Bell inequality to choose, and this kind of problem. Another approach, and this is the one that I consider here, is to try to compare the quantum correlations that you get with other non-local resources, such as classical communication, that are easy to quantify. And if you tell me that, okay, you can simulate the same correlations as you observe on your quantum system with that many amounts of communication, then that gives me a way to quantify the non-locality of my quantum correlations. So now I will review some results on the simulation of singlet correlations. So then, again, the task is Alice and Bob both receive some measurement direction on the Bloch sphere, A and B, and they want to simulate this correlation. They want to simulate this correlation with another non-local resource. For instance, communication. So they can send some communication, and can send some communication to Bob to establish these correlations. And a trivial way to do that would be that Alice sends the full description of the measurement settings that she receives. She just sends A to Bob, and she outputs some predetermined alpha, and Bob knows what to output to recover these correlations. Since he will know both A and B. But if Alice and Bob are allowed to choose any measurement setting on the Bloch sphere, this would, in this case, we need to send infinitely many classical bits to describe the measurement setting A. Right. So then the question is, can you do better than that? And I think the first one to tackle this problem was modeling. He found out that if you restrict the measurement settings on the real plane of the Bloch sphere, then you can achieve this goal with only 1.17 bits on average. Well, that's a drastic improvement from infinitely many bits down to 1.17 17 bits. The thing is, it's on average, so in the worst case, there will still be infinitely many bits. Next ones to tackle this problem are Brassard et al. And they found for arbitrary measurements on the block sphere, they found a protocol with only 8 bits in the worst case. So in the worst case, you just need to send 8 bits, you don't need to send the full description of 8, 8 bits are enough. Okay, I just mentioned this model, this post-selection is another non-local resource. I will talk about it a bit later. There was a model given by the Gisan brothers to model the singlet state with post-selection. Coming back to communication, in 2000 there was a cell and co-workers gave a protocol with 1.19 bits in the worst case. And all this, and then came Turner and Bacon, which they were when they gave the protocol that Michael talked about, and they proved that one single bit is enough to simulate quantum correlations, right? The single correlations. So that's a drastic improvement from infinitely many bits to describe the measurement setting A to down to only 1 bit. The story continues. It was proven that one PR voice, which I will describe later, is actually enough. This is a strictly stronger result. And that's it. So what we conclude from this is that if you quantify the non-locality of quantum correlations with what you can do with classical communication, then this non-locality of the singlet correlation is less than 1 bit of communication, or is less than 1 PR box, which is also called the non-local bit. So that's amazingly a small amount. Okay, how does it work? I will not show you the full calculation, but just give you the idea of the Turner-Bacon model. So that to establish their correlations, they will share random vectors that are distributed on the block sphere, and then there is a deterministic protocol that will give you the singlet correlations. So Alice would just start with this quantity. She sends this classical bit to Bob. That allows him to calculate this quantity, and as a magic it works. So again, the singlet correlations are less non-local than 1 bit of communication. Another non-local resource that you can use is what we call a PR box, named after Popescu and Horlich. And that's a kind of black box where you can input two bits, x and y, bits 0 or 1. And the box would output two other bits, a, b, 0 or 1, such that the sum of the output modulo 2 is equal to the product of the two inputs, and such that locally they are just random outputs. So this cannot be used to communicate, because whatever Alice inputs in her box, she will get a random output. But the magic is when x and y are both equal to 1, they will get different outputs, otherwise they will get the same output. And this is a very useful tool when you study the non-locality. In particular, you can violate the CHSH inequality with that up to the value 4, while with quantum mechanics you can only reach 2 square root of 2. And that's very natural to consider this resource as a unit of non-locality. As I mentioned, mentioned before that there is a protocol that is very similar to the Turner-Bacon protocol that uses, instead of having one bit of communication sent from Alice to Bob, you would use a PR box. The protocol is very similar. You share two random vectors on the block sphere. This is the classical bit that Alice calculated before in the Turner-Bacon model, but now she puts it into the PR box. So this is a plus or minus one bit. So she needs to input a zero or one bit. So she inputs this value, and she outputs this value, taking it into account the result of the PR box. Bob does the same with not lambda 1 and lambda 2, but lambda plus being lambda 1 plus, lambda 2 and lambda minus. And here it puts the same. And again, you get the singlet correlations with this protocol. So the conclusion is that the singlet correlations are less non-local than a PR box. And the third non-local resource that I wanted to mention is the post-selection. So now we allow Alice, for instance, not to output anything. So she can choose just to discard her input and just output nothing with some probability. And this is a non-local resource. And if you want to convince yourself why this is a non-local resource, you can think of the no-detection loophole in Bell experiments, which says essentially that if you have non-perfect detectors and you use post-selection, then you can violate the Bell inequality even with a classical setup. Right. And again, you can show that this resource allows you to reproduce the single correlations for this detection efficiency. Analysis side, or if you want to make it symmetric for a detection efficiency of two cells. So this again allows you to quantify the non-locality by the robustness to detection report. Okay, this was the null results for the singlet state correlations. Now there are still many open questions in the bipartite case. So first, the simulation of POPMs. The simulation of partially entangled states seems to be a much more complicated problem, and essentially the problem is because there are marginals that you want to reproduce. In the singlet state, you have vanishing marginals, so on Alice on both sides, the outcomes look just random. Here you have to simulate also the marginals, and this makes your life much more difficult. Still, it's been shown that you can simulate the partially entangled state with two bits. We don't know if we can do it with one bit. We can do it with millionaire boxes, which are a kind of generalization of the PR boxes. And what is known is that it's impossible to simulate the partially entangled state with one single PR box. So it was possible to simulate the maximally entangled state in one PR box, but not the partially entangled state. So somehow the partial entangled states are more non-local than the maximally entangled state. So there seems to be a difference between the concept of non-locality and entanglement. And another question is the simulation of higher dimensional states. Okay, this was for the bipartite case. Now we want to use the non-local correlations in maybe quantum networks or larger states, and we want to study the n-partite correlations. As you would expect, this is a much more complicated problem, and especially it's just as with entanglement. You have different scenarios to consider, whether it's non-local between one party versus all the others, or really fully n-partite non-local. So the simplest case that we started to study is the GHZ state, and for now the tripartite GHZ state. So you have a source that sends to Alice, Bob and Charlie now a GHZ state of this form. And we will restrict ourselves to measurements and the equator of the Bloch sphere. So that in this case, the measurements can be described by just an angle, the azimuthal angle on the Bloch sphere. And in this case, the correlation takes this very, very nice form. It's just the cosine of the sum of the angles. Why do we restrict ourselves to the equator? It's essentially because if you go out of the equator, you have tripartite marginals. As I said before, the marginals are quite difficult to simulate together with the full correlations. So we just want to look at the equator and the Bloch sphere. Okay, very nice. We have a cosine correlation. For the single state, we had a scalar product correlation, which is a cosine, right? That's the cosine of the angle between the two vectors. So we thought, okay, that looks the same. It should be easy to simulate. That's not quite true. Actually, these people started to look at the problem 2 years ago, and then they gave lower bounds on the simulation of n-partite GHZ correlations. And they seem to have doubts that the simulation is possible with finite communication. Well, we still tried to simulate these correlations, and we found a 1 year ago a protocol with finite average communication. So on average, you can use 10 bits between the different parties and simulate the GHZ correlations to this cosine of the sum of the angles, but still, in the worst case, this will be infinite communication. And the very last results that we just got like 2 weeks ago is it seems to be possible to simulate these correlations with only three bits of communication, two from Bob to Alice, one from Charlie to Alice, and that. That's enough to obtain this cosine correlation. And even actually with two bits, only one from Alice, from Bob to Alice and one from Charlie to Alice, you get a very good approximation of the cosine. And if you plot the function, you don't see any difference between the cosine and this correlation that you can achieve with two bits. Okay, this is how the protocol works. So now Alice and Bob would share a random angle on the equator. Alice and Charlie would share an angle on another angle on the equator. Again, they calculate these angles, these effective angles by A, B, and C that they will use for the protocol, such that, and these angles are such that the sum is equal to the sum of the original measurement angles by A, B, C. And what they do is Bob will tell Alice in which quadrant of the equator this effective angle is. So if it's on this quadrant, he will send a bit plus one, here a minus one. And in this case, where both Bob and Charlie send a plus, saying that this is in this quadrant, Alice can conclude that the sum of these two angles is on this half circle, and depending on whether her angle is on this side and on the other, she would add with alpha plus or minus one. And this is enough for Alice to know in which quadrant these angles are. She can add with the alpha such that the correlation is actually not quite the cosine correlation. You would get this blue correlation when the cosine is the dotted red correlation, But then we found out that you can somehow process this correlation, which is stronger than the cosine correlation. You can process it to really end up with a cosine correlation. So the conclusion from this is that the GHD correlation for the tripartite GHD state is less non-local than 3 bits of communication. And of course, now we're trying to translate this protocol into a protocol with PR boxes, maybe with post-selection, and we're trying to go to n-partite GHD states. So the take-home message of the talk would be that the problem of simulating quantum correlations allows you to quantify the non-locality of quantum states, and you get insight on the power of quantum correlations. The simulation of the simulated state is possible with 1 bit or 1 PR. Simulation of non-maximally entangled state is impossible with 1 PR. So that's an illustration of the fact that entanglement and non-locality are really different resources. And for the last results, we found a protocol to simulate the three-partite GHD state with only 3 bits of communication, and we want to go to n-partite states, other than n-partite states, and also go to non-equatorial measurements.
So you mentioned that entanglement and non-locality are different resources. Is there any sort of tasks in which you can actually use them, show that they're different? So where a non-maximally entangled state is more useful than a maximally entangled state?
Well, if you want to violate a Bernoulli inequality, the CHSH inequality, and you have inefficient detectors, then the partially entangled states are more robust to the detection input. So you can still violate the CHSH inequality with, say, 70% of detection efficiency, which you cannot with maximally entangled state.
Maybe you said this and I just lost concentration, but if you're just simulating the GHZ correlations as opposed to any equatorial measurements,
yeah,
is it how many bits of communication necessary?
So you mean the GHZ correlation, the full three-partite correlation, or?
Yes.
So you don't care about the marginals? Right.
Well, they're random, aren't they?
Or if you go to non-equatorial measurements?
Yeah, but no. I'm saying not the GHZ state, just the GHZ correlation. Oh, so it's a pair of
okay, so you just fix the measurement settings to be X, Y.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Okay, but then you can just some, I guess, 2 bits, Bob and Charlie Woods, and 1 bit twice.
So is it known that 2 bits are necessary?
The GHD correlations are fully non-local, so you cannot just have a separation between Alice and Bob and Charlie together. You really need to have non-locality between the three. So sending 1 bit would not be enough. If you would just send 1 bit from Alice to Bob, say, then Charlie would be separated from the two others, so you cannot recover the fully three-partite non-locality.
And you don't consider protocols which are probabilistic in the sense of sending less than 1 bit on average?
No. Okay, indeed, the Turner-Bacon model, you can go slightly below the 1 bit on average.
it's